First, is it safe to walk in your neighborhood? Is there anything to walk to? A new poll says over 40% of Americans think their neighborhoods are unwalkable. The poll from Kaiser Permanente says most Americans think walking is a good thing. It's good for their health, but many see obstacles to getting around in their communities. You can join in right now. Is your neighborhood walkable? What keeps you from going out for a stroll? What changes would you like to see to make things more walkable? Call 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email, talk@WPR.org. Eric Fredericks joins us now. He's an urban planner. He's the founder of Walkable Neighborhoods. Eric, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
So I mentioned that poll. Are you surprised that a lot of people are saying, my neighborhood, not so good to walk in?
Actually, I'm surprised that the percentage isn't higher. I actually think that maybe some people's definition of walkable neighborhoods is different from mine, which is great because everybody has their own opinion, but I tend to think of a walkable place as a place where you don't necessarily need to have a car to get around to things. A car can be an option if you want to go to some of the longer distance events and things like that. But typically, it's a neighborhood where you can go get your groceries or get a cup of coffee or beer or church, those type of things without necessarily needing a car.
What are some of the common obstacles? We'll get to that kind of planning in a bit, but what are some of the more common, like, safety-type obstacles that people think this isn't a fun and safe place to go out for a stroll?
I think one of the biggest things is streets that are built just for automobiles, typically in mind, and they're typically wider streets. They have high speed, and you don't see the types of streets that we used to see in America when towns were smaller, or when you just had the downtown established neighborhoods, that you have streets that are just have a few intersections every mile, whereas opposed in these older communities, you have a lot of intersections. And when you have a lot of these close things in proximity to the intersections, you don't need these wide streets to handle all the traffic. It's kind of putting all of your eggs into one basket on these really wide streets, and they aren't really designed for pedestrians or cyclists in mind, so that makes it harder. Of course, there's always concerns about safety and perceived safety in some neighborhoods, and then just the infrastructure itself, that you have cracked sidewalks or maybe sidewalks that aren't accessible for all people to get around, that have higher needs, like seniors or disabled or children.
So what's in it for us? Why should we want more walkable neighborhoods? What's the benefit?
There's all kinds of benefits. One of the big things is that some research has found that you actually weigh less in walkable neighborhoods just because you live around things, and it's silly to hop in a car that you just end up walking to a lot of different places. Some research in Atlanta found that, and certainly a lot of Wisconsin cities are probably more walkable than the Atlanta region. And doing this research, they found that in some neighborhoods, people weighed 10 pounds less on average. I certainly could use to lose 10 pounds, but I'm sure a lot of people, but that's one of the benefits. Another one is just that it can save on some transportation costs, that you don't have to drive as far to places. And then just being able to, I know one thing that people don't talk about much, but some people like to have a drink or something with watching a ball game or whatnot and don't want to get in a car. And that's a way to help avoid people being out on the roads drinking, and they can walk or take transit to from those facilities back to their home.
I assume it's a different challenge in different parts of the country, different places. Are there particularly things that suburbs can do to make themselves more walkable? They were originally really built around cars in a lot of cases.
Yeah, some suburban areas are doing some really interesting things. In San Jose, which I know is a pretty big city, but it's really, if you visit it, kind of more set up to be suburban in many areas. They've actually had some shopping centers that have kind of redefined themselves, and they were just old strip shopping centers that have kind of redefined themselves. They added housing on top of some buildings and made it turn the development into more like a town center or urban village. And certainly you're seeing that in other places along the West Coast where that's happening. So it's really kind of shifting how the layout of buildings and commercial districts are happening in the suburbs, that they're not allowing parking in between the building and the street. What that does is bring the activity associated with the commercial development up onto the street. And when that happens, drivers tend to actually slow down because you start looking around at the various things. And so it has this kind of traffic calming effect. And if you travel around the country in some little towns and bigger cities, you'll notice that they tend to have buildings up onto the streets. And that makes a huge difference in terms of walkability. And they're also doing things related to complete streets, adding bike lanes, wider sidewalks, and street trees. And that helps create a more walkable environment for people in the suburbs that maybe it was established for cars initially, but you're seeing more and more turning toward that type of living.
All right. Do you see, before I let you go, do you see a bigger trend toward this? Is the idea of walkable neighborhoods really catching on around the country?
Oh, for sure. And you cited that one study that said that 40% said their neighborhood's unwalkable. Well, in that same Atlanta study and other that I mentioned earlier, and other research that's been done, it's shown that about 66% of people want to live in more walkable neighborhoods. So if you have 40% saying that they can, surely a lot of those folks are going to want to live in walkable neighborhoods. And when you're talking about the scale of America, you have tens of millions of people that aren't getting their demands met. So what we've already started to see in the downturn of the economy is that we've kind of overbuilt single-family housing kind of in more sprawl-type developments. And the market's really saying that people want these more walkable neighborhoods. That's not to say that there aren't going to be neighborhoods for people that love to drive. I think that's always going to exist in America. The millennials and others and some of the aging baby-booming population really prefer to live in areas where they don't necessarily need to have a car. And
right.
It's kind of a bigger shift in America, and we're really seeing these numbers play out.
Eric, thanks a lot for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was Eric Fredericks, urban planner, founder of Walkable Neighborhoods. Coming up, we'll talk about Wisconsin's Northwoods and calls to allow logging on federal lands. First, I'm joined by Chris Molina and Judith Sears-Poisson to talk about our fall membership drive.
Yes, it is our fall membership drive, and listeners provide the single largest piece of our budget. That's why your gift is so important. And to encourage your gift today, your pledge of any amount automatically enters you in a drawing for an iPad. How great is that? So make your gift of any amount right now. WPR.org 888-202-2552. And Chris, we always have goals.
We always have goals. And last hour, we did really well. We heard from 32 listeners.
Wow.
Thank you so much for all of those pledges. And a special thank you to the 11 new members to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Great.
These are people who went to WPR.org or picked up the phone and called 888-202-2552 for the very first time, made their first pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much. But we do have another goal this hour.
New hour, new goal.
It's how we work here at Wisconsin Public Radio. We want to get 40 pledges by 5 o'clock, and that's something that we can definitely do. We put these goals in place to make sure that Wisconsin Public Radio does have the money to pay for the programs like Central Time that you rely on. Meet the goal. Help us get there. We can only do it with your pledge. Right now, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you're like me, you've found yourself thinking about something in a new way after you've heard one of our shows. That's the beauty of the Ideas Network. You hear multiple points of view, and you hear perspectives that you may never have even known were out there. You value what you hear on the Ideas Network. Now pledge your support. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now, it's such a great thing to do, and it only takes just a few minutes of your time. You know, one of the things that we hear from people is, you know, they think that, you know, it takes a lot of effort to make this pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. It doesn't. It takes 2 minutes of your time. We just need your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. Whether you call or pledge online, we keep your personal information safe, and we don't share it with any other organization.
And best of all, your gift supports the stories and programs that keep you connected to the world. Give now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, maybe you're listening to Central Time on your drive home. Think about the time you spend listening to WPR in the car. Weekdays, you get the news and issues. Weekends, you get the laughs and music.
And you make great use of your time when you listen in the car. You get where you're going, and you also get inspiration and information. Your life is enriched. Your time is enjoyable every time you get behind the wheel.
And your gift helps make the quality time you spend with us in the car or anywhere possible. Make that pledge right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, Peter Sagal here. Look, normally I host my show and make rude jokes about people who put ferrets in their pants, but today I just want to level with you. Yes, you. It's time to be honest. You know those pledge drives where cheerful guys and gals from this station interrupt the programming for minutes at a time to ask you to call in now and make a donation in exchange for a tote bag? Yeah. You hate them. Here's the thing. I hate them too. Why wouldn't I? They interrupt my show. Do you know how many ferrets in the pants jokes you miss because somebody's asking you for money? But it's worse. When you give money, when you call up with that one-time pledge, you're making it worse. If you give money like that, they're just going to interrupt and ask you again. So we need to end the vicious cycle of pledge drives. And there's only one way. Become a sustaining member. Not only will you not have to worry about renewing your contribution every time people start pleading with you on the radio, but if enough people do it, if enough of you become sustaining members of this station, you know what might happen? The pledge drives might end or get shorter. Less interruptions, less cheerful wheedling, more ferrets in your pants. You can see that brave new world if you just squint and if you go online now to become a sustaining member.
You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We do not have ferrets in our pants, but we do have Rob Ferret in the studio. He'll be hosting the next segment of Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson here with Chris Molina, asking for your support of WPR during this fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount, and you can pledge that amount right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, the important part is that you find an amount that works for you and you make that pledge, and you make it right now. It's so easy to do. It takes 2 minutes of your time. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Chris and Judith, thanks. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. I'm only in my own pants, and we'll keep it that way. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk about logging in Wisconsin. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we're talking about a national bee crisis and how it's affecting us here in Wisconsin. First, we're going to the North Woods to take a look at the logging industry. The Gannett, Wisconsin Media Investigative Team put together a three-part series focusing on the problems in northern Wisconsin's logging industry. They're calling the series Timber Trouble. The print series is going to come out this weekend, but here to give us a preview is Nick Penzenstadler. He's a reporter for Post Crescent Media. Nick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us.
So why did you decide to do this series to tackle the logging industry in Wisconsin?
Well, we've heard anecdotally a lot about the changes in the industry, and obviously the roots go deep here in Wisconsin, and especially with the paper industry. But we wanted to explore a little bit more about the national forest and its resources and how it's being managed and how that impacts the rest of the economy here in the state.
And those national forests are a big issue, and that's part of your series. What's the story there? Some want to do more logging there, and some don't. Break it down.
Yes. The National Forest has this long past of this land that was kind of forgotten and overused and really trashed. It was awful at the turn of the century. They were logged off. It was really ugly up there, and they were taken over, rehabbed. You know, the Conservation Corps had a lot to do with that, and they're back. But now there's this concern that they're not being harvested enough, and we're kind of wasting this resource. It's almost like ANWR, another resource that is almost too protected in the eyes of a lot of these loggers, and you lose the resource if you don't harvest.
What kind of economic impact would harvesting more out of the Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest have on towns in northern Wisconsin?
Well, that's really the crux of this is, you know, the economic development folks up there say that more harvest would result in direct job growth. They're saying the loggers, the people who haul the logs, the mills would create as many as 4,000 jobs in the 11 counties that surround the National Forest. And again, that's over a longer period of time, and some people will dispute that number, but it's hard to dispute that more logging would lead to more jobs.
Never quite that simple, though. There's also arguments about tourism kind of on both sides of this issue, right?
Yeah. Many argue that the industry has changed so much up there that it's moving more mechanized and away from manufacturing and logging and more towards the tourism and service industry that has really blossomed up there. And it's a beautiful area. Everyone knows that northern Wisconsin's a destination for hunting and fishing and vacationing. But it doesn't quite have the same economic impact. So there's kind of this balancing act between those two.
And then there's forests, and then there's forests. I think you quote some hunters who say, we're not getting the animals we want. There's too much forest. There's not enough undergrowth. We can't hunt for a lot of things we want to hunt for there.
Yeah, we toured this this piece of federal land that hasn't been logged in 60 years, and it's really thick and dark and not the friendliest place for deer and game animals to live. So it's not that appealing for hunters. So for people who are looking to even preserve that area, it's almost to the point where it's not worth hunting. But there are some redeeming qualities, that's kind of an interesting story as well.
We'll talk about that. And some people in the ecology trade say, hey, this is good stuff, right?
Right. Yeah. We talked to some EW professors who know that argument, and they've heard that argument that this is wasted and overmature is wasting a resource, but they don't look at it that way. They say this is perfect. We have so few areas like this left where it's dead and dying trees, and it's great for denning animals. It's great for salamanders and all these things you maybe don't think about, but they need a place to live, and they haven't had it because we've overstressed the resource.
This is, I mean, how many different natural resources issues are there like this that at first it seems like they're kind of jobs and environment, but there are all these different wrinkles within that the closer you look.
Yeah, it's exactly right. It's a huge thing to try to get your head around. And then at the heart of it is this federal agency, the U.S. Forest Service, trying to sort it all out. And as everyone knows, that's not usually the best solution for balancing everything, especially now when they're not even working.
With the shutdown, right. Well, and now you also point out this is creating some strange bedfellows. Go ahead and talk about that.
Well, we were up there when they saw this as a big victory. The economic development folks, they got Tammy Baldwin to come up on her first visit to Forest County as a senator. And she's recently been named to the Natural Resources Committee, which is really important for Wisconsin. And they're viewing this as an opportunity to maybe get some movement and leverage on the federal side, with Tammy Baldwin maybe pushing for more logging. So it's kind of, again, hard to get your head around, but they're saying she could hold the keys to maybe unlocking some of this untapped potential in the Northwoods.
And are the, politically speaking, I know I don't want to stereotype a huge group, but are the logging interests up there traditional Democratic supporters?
That would be a little bit of an overstatement. I think this is a pretty hardy conservative area that tends to vote to the right, and you know, Sean Duffy represents that area, and it would be really interesting to see all the support for Tammy Baldwin if she can get something done for them.
What would it take to get that something done, and how much are we talking about? Massive amounts of logging, or a little bit here and there, or what are people shooting for up there?
Well, I mean, there are extremes where people would want to open these lands up to a lot more logging, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think what they're maybe more looking for is some loosening of the regulations. A lot of this, it's allowed to be cut, but because it's so difficult to set up some of the harvest and it takes so long and it's so onerous on some of these companies, they're saying it's not worth it and it just goes to waste. So I think what they're looking for is a little loosening of some of the rules to get it done faster and more efficiently, and then that could lead to some larger harvests. I mean, right now they're not harvesting as much as been, you know, federally allocated. They can cut more, but they haven't.
Even with the tourism you mentioned earlier, how are these towns we're talking about that would be affected by logging doing economically? Are they hurting for jobs?
They are. I mean, the story of the Northwoods economy has kind of been boom and bust, and right now it's really relying on what's left of these manufacturing sectors and also the tourism. But these towns have dwindled to the point where they're looking at shutting their schools down. We're in Leona, where they're going to have to pass another referendum to keep their school open. You know, they've combined a lot of their sports teams already with nearby districts, and they're struggling. So they're kind of at a make-or-break point.
Another weird twist, wildfires out west factor into the story of forests here in Wisconsin. What's up with that?
They do. Since 2002, we've had these super fires, these, you know, massive fires you see out in the west where there's the planes going over, dropping the water and fire retardant, and it saps the resources for the rest of the forest because it ends up sucking resources from the eastern forest and the whole system to fight the fires out west. So they transfer billions of dollars from right here in Wisconsin out to fight the fires, leaving us kind of to do with what we have left to get done the normal stuff, you know, taking care of the campgrounds and taking care of the trails. So it kind of puts the Forest Service in a tough spot where they're paying for stuff that's not even here.
Just briefly, is there any talk of getting those funds restored or found somewhere else, a tall order I know from the federal budget?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't see that changing dramatically in the near term, but I know there's talk about trying to flip how this gets paid because it ends up being a huge strain on the budget at the end of the year because the money runs out, and they're trying to flip it so they can kind of send the bill and get it paid afterwards instead of on the front end.
Nick, good to talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Great. Thank you very much.
That was Nick Penzenstadler, reporter for Post Crescent Media. The series Timber Trouble from Gannett, Wisconsin premieres this Sunday, October 20th. Coming up next, we'll talk to an expert about a bee crisis around the United States, how it's affecting us here in Wisconsin. A reminder, we're in the midst of our fall membership drive. You can support great conversations like this about the economy and ecology of Wisconsin at 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or go online, WPR.org. Your pledge, your contribution really does make a difference. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time. Veronica Rickert will be back with me tomorrow. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk about bees, a mysterious colony collapse disorder around the country. We'll find out how it's affecting us and affecting agriculture here in Wisconsin. First, I've got Chris Molina here and Judith Sears-Poisson. They're going to tell you about our fall membership drive.
Yes, there's quite a buzz about our fall membership drive. I couldn't help myself. Well, we are here to ask you, if you're still listening after that bad pun, we're here to ask you to support the programs you enjoy, like Central Time. Your support makes high-quality, commercial-free programs on WPR possible. And when you make your pledge today, you'll be entered in a drawing for an iPad. Now is a great time to support the programs you value with your gift. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Judith, did you come up with that pun off the top of your head, or were you thinking about that going into this break?
It was pretty spontaneous, yeah.
Okay, it was really good. Well, anyways, we're looking for about 27 pledges in the next 30 minutes or so. And if you've already given this hour or today, thank you so much. But if you haven't, please help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, Chris, I work on the Larry Mailer Show. As you know, Larry has been on the air at WPR since 1967.
Wow.
Well, especially when you look at that kind of history. In the greater scheme of shows on WPR, Central Time is brand new. You guys have just gotten started this summer, and we're all excited to be part of the spirit of innovation on Wisconsin Public Radio.
And as a producer on Central Time, it's been incredibly exciting for me to work on this new innovative show, to try something new, to try something different. It's been such a wonderful experience. experience, but I know that I couldn't do this, we couldn't do this as a show if it weren't for members of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to your support, new shows like Central Time have a chance to see the light of day. Your contribution right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is a vote for Central Time. It's a vote for innovation. It's a vote for Wisconsin Public Radio.
And when you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, you can always be assured that we always have your interests at heart. We can continue to serve our listeners and communities because of the support we receive from members, including the 550 members of WPR's 9XM Leadership Circle. 9XM members support WPR with a gift of $1,200 or more a year. That's about $100 a month. To make this leadership gift of $100 a month or a gift of any amount, and we really mean that, any amount, go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You know, here's something that really sets Wisconsin Public Radio apart from other radio stations on your dial. When you listen to WPR, you're not alone. You might be alone in your car or at home or in your office, but you're sharing the experience with us and with other listeners.
And we all have a lot in common. We share values that bind us together. Your support is a big part of what makes this program possible for you and for the community you share it with. So give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And because you have our back, well, we'd like to think that we have your back as well. Everyone who pledges today, we're going to enter you in a drawing for an iPad. You, yes, you could be the lucky winner when you make that pledge right now of any amounts at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and telephone number. Send that postcard to WPR iPad Drawing, 821 University Avenue, that's in Madison, 53706 is the zip, and enter by sending a postcard, or, you know, it's even easier. You don't have to find a pen or a stamp or anything. Just make that pledge right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I love to listen to both the classical music and the Ideas Network stations because it seems to me they're the only ones that are worthwhile to listen to. The Ideas Network gives opposing political views and allows us, the general public, to express our views about current issues. It's important for me to be able to come to my own conclusions about issues. This is one way that I can do that.
Come to your own conclusions and make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Judith Sears-Poisson here with Chris Molina, happy to be asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio this afternoon. Thank you in advance for your gift. Maybe it's $10 or $15 a month. Whatever amount is right for you is the right amount. Make that pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And the process of pledging at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Well, it's quick and it's easy. And when you become a sustainer, you really simplify your donation. You'll make automatic monthly gifts from your bank account or your credit card.
And that support will renew automatically each year, so your membership is always up to date. So pick an amount that works for you, maybe $10 a month. The important thing is to do it now. Become a sustainer right now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And that pledge right now says, I value this program. I want more Central Time. It makes me think. It makes me laugh. It makes me wonder. You fill in the blank with how you feel when you hear the show. Those are powerful feelings, and you make a powerful statement when you support what you value, what you believe in. Believe in Wisconsin Public Radio. Give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we love hearing the comments that come along with people's pledges. And there was one, Chris, that I know that you were especially excited to share.
Yeah, we heard from Raina in Eau Claire, who says, as a radio broadcast major at UWEC, I want to support radio in any way I can. Radio means the world to me. Thank you for all you do. Well, Raina, if you're out there listening, I was a radio broadcast major at the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire too, and I have to say that I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for people like you, people making those donations, people supporting Wisconsin Wisconsin Public Radio. Please make that donation. If you're like Raina and you're out there and you want to see great radio, if you want to hear great radio every day, you got to make that pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Chris, Judith, thank you so much, and thank you for your pledge. It means a lot at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. This is Central Time. We're going to talk about bees now. Bee populations around the country have been declining at mysteriously high rates, a phenomenon called bee colony collapse disorder. Since the mid-2000s or so, the decline has affected not just honey production, but all the crops that depend on pollinators here in North America. Well, how's it affecting us here in Wisconsin? We have Hannah Gaines Day with us. She's a graduate research assistant in the entomology department at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's going to be speaking tonight at the Mead Public Library in Sheboygan from 6:30 to 8 this evening. Hannah, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So how much has this hit us? Have we seen a big bee decline here in Wisconsin?
Well, pollination is really important. One in every three bites that we eat is dependent on pollinators, with bees being the most important pollinators. And it affects us here in Wisconsin because we have a number of pollinator-dependent crops like cranberry, apple, pickling cucumbers, and so it affects and cherries. So it affects our state economy.
And are we like a lot of states? As I understand it, there are roaming beekeepers who go from crop to crop, season to season, and bring their bee colonies along with them to pollinate. Are we seeing that? Are we seeing declines there hurting agriculture in the state yet?
So the bees, you're correct. The bees that are sent out to almond pollination in California are the same bees that we have in Wisconsin. The most obvious effect we've seen so far is that the price of the beehives for the farmers to rent is higher in Wisconsin than it was before the declines, and the quality of the hives is lower than it used to be.
Do we have a sense, I know it's still an open question, but what are the potential culprits in this bee colony collapse?
So we don't know the exact causes of colony collapse disorder, but there are a few things that we're pretty sure are playing a part in it. One is pesticide exposure. Another one is poor nutrition. The bees that get shipped around the country are fed corn syrup solution while they're being shipped, so they're not getting all the nectar and pollen from diverse flowers. And that also causes a lot of stress on the bees being shipped around.
So are there solutions there? Are people able to use fewer pesticides, for example?
There are a number of ways that farmers and everyday people can help the bees. One is to reduce pesticide use in their on their farm or in their yard, or apply pesticide when the bees are not active, so in the evening when the bees are not on the flowers. Also providing good foraging resources, so lots of different types of flowers that bloom throughout the season will help with the bees' nutrition.
And are we doing some of those things here in Wisconsin?
We are. So there's a group of apple growers who have started putting in pollinator habitat. If you look around urban areas, you'll see pollinator gardens coming up. So, yeah, we are doing that in Wisconsin, too.
Now, as I understand it, your talk today actually focuses on native bees, and I've only recently started to get the distinction. The bees that are traveling from farm to farm with the beekeepers are of European origin. Is that right?
That is correct. So modern agriculture in this country depends on the honeybee, which is only one species. It's not native to North America. It was brought over in the 1600s with the settlers for wax production so they could have candles. But there are also a huge diversity of native bees in North America and in Wisconsin. We have about 500 different species in Wisconsin.
And do those native bees play much of a role in pollination now, or could they?
Yeah, so native bees are fantastic pollinators. Some of them are more efficient pollinators than honeybees, but they're mainly solitary. So with the honeybees, you have a huge colony. They're fairly easy to manage. You put them where you need them when you need crop pollination. The native bees are solitary, and so in order to manage for native bees, you really need to manage for floral and nesting resources so that they can survive in the landscape.
So it sounds like good news if the problem is colony collapse disorder and these native bees don't live in colonies. Are they not affected by this problem we're seeing with those honeybees?
That is correct. Native bees are not affected by a lot of the issues that honeybees are affected by, disease and parasites and such, but they are affected by pesticide exposure, and they depend on having resources in the landscape available. So with expansion of agriculture and intensive agriculture, they don't have the resources they need. So we're seeing parallel declines in native bees, but due to different reasons.
Well, it sounds like from some what you said, this is a really different, potentially a really different approach to farming. Instead of planting a big zone with one kind of crop and needing the bees for this 1 or 2 week pollinating season, that's it. We're managing an ecosystem almost if we're trying a different method.
Yeah, that's a great way to look at it.
So what would it take for, say, I'm a farmer who does a monocrop. I grow one thing right now. What are the steps I would start taking to have this ecosystem where wild domestic bees are, well, it's a place they want to live?
Yeah, so one example I can give you is the California almond growers. Almond is a huge monoculture that brings lots and lots of honeybees in for pollination. And when there's no almond flowers, it's a food desert for the bees. There's just no food. And so they've started putting in strips of wildflowers in between their trees. Their system is a little bit unique because it's a perennial tree crop, so they have that space on the ground. But even other crops like watermelon or other annual crops that require pollinators can put in rows of flowering crops or even just borders of their fields into native wildflowers.
Now, you're in the entomology department. Do you get a sense of urgency among your fellow entomologists about trying to find a solution, either cure the disease or find ways around it to help the crops?
There's definitely a lot more awareness since I started my research on bees. Now it seems like just about everyone has heard about colony collapse disorder and decline in bees. So I do feel a bit of urgency. I think it's because when you talk to just about anyone, they know about it. And there's a lot of sort of corporate interest now with Haagen-Dazs has a campaign to save the bees and Whole Foods has a campaign to save the bees. So a lot more people are getting involved.
And do most people focus on those European honeybees and helping them out? Or do they see what you've been talking about, the native bees, as part of the overall picture?
There's definitely been a big focus on honeybees, but I think people are becoming more aware of the presence of native bees as well.
So looking ahead, are you optimistic that there's a solution to this problem, that we're not going to have a massive crop disaster because there aren't enough bees?
I am optimistic. I think that with the awareness of native bees and farmers interested in putting in bee habitat on their farms and funding available for them to do that, I think that it's a positive future.
So you are, as I mentioned, talking in Sheboygan tonight at the Meade Public Library. That's 6:30 to 8. Why are you getting out of the lab and out of the fields and talking to the public about this?
Well, one of the parts that I really enjoy is sharing my research, and pollination and pollinators is a really great subject because it should be important to everyone. Everyone eats. Everyone needs to eat. And so getting out and talking to the public and talking to farmer groups is one part that I really enjoy about my research.
All right. And can you give us a couple highlights, anything you haven't mentioned today that you're going to dig a little deeper in your talk tonight?
So I guess one thing I wanted to mention is just what people can do to help bees is providing flower resources, nesting resources, avoiding pesticide. But also there's been a lot of talk recently about poisonous plants. And so when you're buying plants at a nursery, it's important to ask the nursery staff if they've used systemic pesticides, which are pesticides that come through the plant and come out of the pollen and nectar. So when the bees visit these flowers, they're actually picking up pesticide. So you could be providing a beautiful floral resource, but if they've been treated with systemic pesticide, it's not actually a good resource. So that's one thing to check before you put in your pollinator plantings.
Well, if I know anything about Wisconsin Public Radio listeners, I know a lot of them are mapping out their garden plans for the spring right now. Any especially bee-friendly flowers that you would suggest they incorporate?
So native plants will be your best bet. You want flowers that produce nectar and pollen, so the bees get both when they visit. And you want to choose flowers that bloom all throughout the season. So any given day during the season, you have at least 3 species of flowers blooming. And planting those in clumps make them more attractive to the bees. So it's not necessarily a specific plant, but the way you plant them and that there are flowers all season.
All right. So I'll keep that echinacea going at least.
Yeah, that's a good one.
All right, Hannah, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much.
That was Hannah Gaines Day. She's a graduate research assistant at the UW-Madison's Department of Entomology. She talks about how beneficial insects affect agriculture. Again, she'll be at the Mead Public Library in Sheboygan tonight, just a little while, actually, 6:30 to 8 this evening. Well, coming up, we've got lots of action in the state legislature today. We're going to hear about property taxes, school logos, and landlord-tenant laws. That's all coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert's off today. She'll be back tomorrow. In just a few minutes, we're going to hear about a lot going on at the state capitol today. There's a lot of action in the Assembly, the Senate, and the Joint Finance Committee. First, though, I've got Chris Molina and Judith Sears-Plasson with me to tell us about our fall membership drive. Hey, we're over halfway to our goal
this
hour.
We are. There's a lot of action happening here, too,
Sweet.
Not just up at the state capitol. You know, listeners provide the single largest piece of our budget. That's really surprising to people, but it's true. That's why your gift is so important. And to sweeten the deal, to make your gift today, your pledge of any amount automatically enters you into a drawing for an iPad. So make your gift of any amount right now. WPR.org 888-202-2552.
We need to get about 16 more pledges in the next 10 minutes. I know we can do it.
We can do it.
We've already heard from 12 new members this hour.
Ooh.
Thank you so much to everyone who's donated for the very first time. You know, making that first donation, it's so easy to do. All you have to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
I'm guessing you enjoyed the conversation with Hannah Gaines about the bee crisis in Wisconsin. I'm also betting that you learned something new. Now take a few minutes to make this hour and many more hours like this possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge. The important thing is to do it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And giving to Wisconsin Public Radio, it's so easy to do, and it just takes a few minutes of your time. A gift of any amount, say $10 a month.
That donation will come back to you every day in the form of great programs. Make your contribution, WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And please, give as generously as you can.
I'm Marcy from Madison, Wisconsin. I'm a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio. First of all, the word obsessed has been used with public radio. I've been listening to nothing but public radio for probably upwards of 20-some years. When I made a transition moving back to Wisconsin after being gone for 20-some years, it was a great way for me to sort of get back to what was going on, feeling involved. It was a great connection, and I think that's probably the word that I think of the most. I feel very connected when I'm listening to public radio. I'm a sustaining member because I don't have to think about it. Well, first of all, it's so easy. I don't have to do anything. I wish all my bills could just magically be paid that way. And although it's not a bill for what it gives back to me, it is something that I'm willing to pay for. It enriches my life. It's invaluable to me, so I'm happy to give back.
Make your donation now in support of the programs you count on, maybe the programs you're obsessed with, like Marcy said, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson here with Chris Molina, asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during our fall membership drive. Whether you pledge $5 a month or $100 a month or anything above, below, or in between, we really appreciate it and count on it.
The important part is that you give. You find the amount that works for you, and then you make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help pay for the programs you depend on. And we're looking for about 15 more pledges in the next 10 minutes. Please make that donation right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Hey guys, I'm going to let you finish, but I want to jump in here and say, we've got a thing we haven't talked about, a brand new Wisconsin Public Radio travel mug from Clean Canteen. If you're like me, you drink beverages. Right. I know.
Oh, going out on a limb there.
I know.
Robert.
Wisconsin Public Radio listeners drink liquids. It's a fact. It's proven. There's surveys prove this.
I think we have research to back that.
Right. Now, if you pledge $15 a month, that's $180, you can ask for your very own brand new, it's got our new logo on it too, Wisconsin Public Radio travel mug from Clean Canteen. It's the real deal. You can drink cold or hot things from it. Pretty sweet.
Whoa.
So ask for it when you pledge $15 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You're part of Wisconsin Public Radio's community of listeners and, according to Rob, part of our beverage consumers as well. You know, maybe you have been for a long time, and now you can become a part of our community of members, people who loyally support the programs they value.
Your contribution of any amount makes you a member. If you've never given before, and you might want to start with a pledge of $5 a month, you make a pledge, your friend makes a pledge, your neighbor makes a pledge. All those pledges added together make WPR happen. It starts with you right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, just 10 more pledges now to hit our goal. We can do it.
We took a big jump.
I think 9.
Right.
See, they're counting down right now. You can help us hit this goal. Make a pledge right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You might be thinking, well, when are they going to tell me how much to give? Well, we haven't told you that because that's up to you. Your contribution of any amount will be turned into great programs like Central Time, programs that keep you both informed and entertained all year long.
So make that contribution in any amount right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And when you do, you play an essential part in funding the programs you count on every day.
Lynn from Mequon says, love to listen to WPR all day at work and especially on Saturdays. Well, if you find your WPR habit is weekdays, weekends, and everything in between, join Lynn from Mequon. Pledge right now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And when you make that pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, if you make a pledge of $15 a month or more, we're going to give you that WPR travel mug made by Clean Canteen. It's so handy. It's a great reminder of how much you enjoy WPR. Get it right now. It's yours for a pledge of $15 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's really simple. You appreciate Wisconsin Public Radio. We count on you to support it. Your pledge makes a difference. It really does. They all add up. Pledge now at WPR.org or make your contribution at 888-202-2552. And thank you.